give one insight into the Shema that I've learned in the past, and one broad idea in this one yesterday. Obviously, time is not permitted to elaborate too much further on any of these topics. Of course, it's an appropriate way to conclude the Zman. Hashem, we had an opportunity to learn the latest part of Masechta Brachos. The first half of the Zman was dedicated to Kriya Shema, the second half of the Zman was dedicated to Shema Esrei. So we ended the bang. The Gemara in Masechta Pesachim, here in Brachos, I don't really recall much mention of this, brings up the idea of the fact that our practice has been to recite after the Shema a pasuk from the Torah Sheval Peh. Interesting tidbit, and not to quiz somebody on. Where do we recite in the davening a passage in the Torah Sheval Peh? And that's Baruch Shem Kavod Mechus Olam Voed. It's not a pasuk in the Torah. If you look in Parshas Ekev, where not Parshas Ekev, Parshas Vos Chanan, where the first parsha of Shema is written down, it says Shema Yisrael Hashem Hakim Hashem Echad. It's Moshe Rabbeinu talking in the name of Kadosh Baruch Hu, prophecy. And then the next pasuk after that is Hashem. So our practice, we recite Baruch Shem Kavod in the middle, is clearly not a direct statement of what it says in the Torah Shabbosav, but rather somehow it's an addition. Where does that addition come from? So it's part of the oral tradition. That's what you're supposed to say. Then where does it come from? So there are two separate sources for this. There's the Gemara, which is not so well known, and there's the Medrash, which is well known. We'll start with the Medrash, that's well known. The Medrash says that Moshe Rabbeinu was on Har Sinai, so we heard in the heavenly spheres that the Malachim were praising Kadosh Baruch Hu, or in a certain sense, as we'll see later, but they were being Makabel Al Malchut Shemayim. They were, if you will, declaring their loyalty to the Creator with the sentence Baruch Shem Kvod Malchus Olam Voed. And then Moshe, in the language of the Medrash, kind of, so to speak, he stole it away from them, meaning he brought it down below, even though they never gave him permission to reveal it in the lower world. And he taught Klal Yisrael orally that our revealed declaration of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's malchus to the world, and our loyalty and allegiance to that, Ishma Yisrael Hashem HaKadosh Hashem Echad. But I got a good tidbit from the Malachim, and we're going to say that also. But since, now the way it was generally taught in the lower grade, that you don't want the Malachim to be jealous. Now, it could be that that's the phraseology of the Medrash, I don't recall, but that needs a lot of analysis. I'm jealous, the Malachim are jealous, human beings. As far as the Malachim are concerned, we're scum of the earth, you know, we don't really deserve existence. Again, I'm quoting from other Midrashim, where they were critical of God's decision to create man. Why did he create man? He's prone to sin, etc. So, and then gradually, when a man elevates themselves, then the Malachim realize that man is to be higher than them, because they're able to overcome the Yetzer Hara, which Malachim don't have. So the Medrash says, so therefore Hashem told Moshe, Klal Yisrael, but we're going to say it quietly, because we don't want the Malachim to hear. And the Medrash, I believe, gives the following example. When you have stolen goods, and you want to give it to your wife as a necklace, obviously it's not something you should be doing. The whole Medrash needs analysis. But he didn't really steal it. He just, you know, it's not even copyright. You know. But so that needs analysis in its own right. But in the analogy, so a thief steals a pearl necklace, whatever, a diamond necklace from the palace. So he tells his wife to wear it in private. Don't wear it to public functions. Otherwise, you're going to get arrested and get thrown in jail. So too, so our this gem of a phrase of Hashem that, so to speak, was stolen from the Malachim, so we can only say it privately, say it quietly. Okay? That's the more famous Medrash that is more widely taught. Again, it's usually taught that Malachim shouldn't be jealous. That's not really quite what the Medrash, I don't think it says that. I think it has that language, they shouldn't be angry or be mekatreig. Like, who are these human beings to be saying that? Like, what kind of business is this? That's like, you know, so some 6-year-old pipsqueak, you know, learning Tikkuni Zohar, like, where do you come to that kind of learning? Unless it's like the Gro or something already, you know, well on his way of learning chess. Anyway, so the Gemara of Pesachim, though, I remember hearing this many times from my Rebbe, got a chance to look it up since then. Remember the first time I heard it, I said, really? Never heard that before. That's what it says, and that's the more revealed reason what I'm about to say. And that goes as follows. I think I mentioned this before, and I think the Talmidim already knew this. Then on Yaakov Avinu's deathbed, so he gathered all the Shvatim together, and he was about to bless them. And but before he blesses them, so in Parshas Vayechi it says that Heyasfu v'agidu lachem eisa sheyikra eschem b'achris hayamim. Gather together, and I'm going to tell you what's going to happen in the end of days. And Chazal had tradition that part of what Yaakov Avinu wanted to tell them was the end game of history and the day, exact date of when Mashiach would come. He wanted to be Bikesh Yaakov Avinu legalos es haketz. He wanted to reveal the end time. V'nistalkem en Hashchina, and the Shechina, the divine presence that gave him the spirit of prophecy, left him, and he was not able to reveal it. So he was not aware of the fact that Hashem was displeased with his plan to reveal the Kates, which has its own dynamic as to why Hashem doesn't want the Kates revealed, except for the top-notch tzaddikim, who are not expected to give it over to other people. He thought the Shechina left him because his children, or one of them, or more of them, were pasul, that they went off to Derech. It could be they had long beards and turbans on their heads, but and the inside that they were a bunch of heretics who didn't believe in God and wanted to follow in the footsteps of Yaakov's illustrious brother, Esav. So he was afraid of this. Clearly, it just dramatized it a bit. In Yaakov's life, there were some, how shall we say, run-ins with his children. There were extreme points of tension between certain of his children in life, with Shimon and Levi, Yehuda. There's a whole interchange between Yosef and Yaakov's apparent favoritism of him. There wasn't a smooth upbringing. So if you wanted to think about it deeply, there was ample grounds, for rebellions in the father's ways. That exactly was the beauty of Klal Yisrael. Nonetheless, even though they all had their different, very intense personalities, just as a brief aside, I was joking around with one of the other Bayim in terms of the trials and tribulations of parenting, to put it mildly. One of the things we mentioned, you think two children who wiped out a city at Bar Mitzvah were easy? And the point being that sometimes great personalities, Shimon and Levi were great personalities. Sometimes, by definition, they have to have a wild childhood. Because anger is very much parallel to activity and zeal and energy. So a lot of times, there's an expression in Chinuch, that the Shovavim make the best learners. There's a shame that, if you have a shovav, that should be the case. But a lot of times the enormous energy that a child exhibits in a very frustrating, unreal way for the parents that makes their lives miserable for a good chunk of the years, but ultimately that's just their hidden talents that are being fostered. So that ultimately, there's a shame, they could channel that same energy for positive purposes. So that's an aside. Should file it away for later. In terms of, don't get too frustrated with your kids when they break everything in your house. Okay, now, back to our, some people are smiling because they probably did that when they were younger, right? Well, look where you are now, Baruch Hashem. Okay, so now so he looks at them and he says, Shema yesh bechem psul? Quite a question to ask, on a deathbed. Maybe one of you guys, closet heretics, because the Shechina just left me, and I'm supposed to be giving you people a bracha. So they told him, no, Shema Yisrael, Shem Elkeinu Shem Echad. Listen here, our Father Yisrael, that God is our God, God is one. When I taught this before, so one of my students asked me, he said, how could they refer to Yisrael by his name? This is their father. I was caught by surprise. I never thought of that question. So I noticed that in the Svarim of the Alkat Yosef series, the Bitzvak Yosef, the Vav Yosef son, he wrote two beautiful volumes on the laws of Kibra Ve'im. Very nice limud. Tried to get more involved in that study, both in terms of learning and teaching it. So he has that question. He doesn't answer it. He refers you to a certain volume, which I didn't get my hands on yet, that asks the question. I assume that the answer goes something like this, that Yaakov's name was Yaakov. Yisrael was his title. Yes, if you look in the Midrashim, the first few pages of Derech Hashem, which I urge you to read, at least the first few pages, if not the whole Sefer, very beautiful Sefer, from Rabbi Ramchal. So he points out that the name Yisrael is a concept. Yisrael is that those people, or perhaps even the whole world, who will carry the divine message to the world. So in Yaakov Avinu, being the third in the generation of great Tzadikim, battle with the Malach, thus indicating that that battle with the Malach was like a cosmic battle, that he was okay, he was gonna win. I mean, he, as representing his entire nation, was, even if they fall, and a limp, right, that's Yaakov being a limp, even if they'll fall a lot of times, but they're gonna win that battle. So he was crowned with that title. Now you will build a nation that represents that concept of the people who will carry the God message to the world. So Yisrael was a title. Yaakov was his name. Yisrael was his title. So maybe you could use that. I didn't see it written down, but I thought that maybe that would be an answer. They would not be able to say Shema Yaakov. That would be a violation of Kibbutz Avein. But they could say Shema Yisrael. That's like saying, if your father's the president, listen, president. Right? Even though, okay, you call your father, father. No, president's also a title. You know, sometimes kids joke around, they haven't seen any swarm, and they still say the father's a rabbi. Sometimes they refer to the father's rabbi. I would imagine that it's not also. It's also a title of respect. Yeah, we don't have a question?
I just read the Maharal and comments in Shema Yisrael, and Shema Yisrael is like an Adis. You're saying it's a Yafi to all of Yisrael, so maybe if Yaakov's challenging them, like, how do I know that you guys are for real? And you're saying it back.
It's Eidus.
Yeah.
But still, how could they refer to him by name in the Eidus?
No, but it's more like
Yisrael means the nation.
Yisrael, everyone, you're right.
Ah, okay. So by Yisrael he meant that could be. Except Yisrael as a nation.
Referring to him as well here.
But maybe you're saying so Shema Yisrael was to everyone there. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's another idea. I'm actually going to quote the Maharal in a moment. So it's almost the same Maharal. What are you reading this Maharal?
In his Siddur.
In the Siddur. Ah, so they're probably excerpting from the Nesiv Avoda, I assume. That's where I got it from. The Nesiv Avoda and the Nesiv Soil. The Siddur is artificial, you know, right? The Siddur, I assume. I don't think the Maharal Siddur. The Maharal Siddur. It's very kedai to go through. I didn't get a chance to. When I first started looking into Tefillah, so one of the first things I looked at was the Maharal's Nesiv Soil and the Nesiv Avoda. Yes, a lot of very fundamental ideas based on the Agadah, that's most of them is after Brachas, about a few. So then when Yaakov Avinu heard that they're all believers, so then he said, Baruch Shem Kavod Mechus Olam. Says the Gemara, since Moshe Rabbeinu did not write it in his Torah that he received from Hashem, but we have Masorah from Yaakov Avinu that he did say Baruch Shem Kavod Ev Tishma, so we make a compromise and say it quietly. Right, that's the other version of why we say it. Where else does Baruch Shem Kavod come up? So we know where else does Baruch Shem Kavod a prominent part of either our communal service or individual service or geographical service.
Or the Chabad.
Yeah, we say it quietly there, that's correct. What do you say out loud? Saying Kippur, you say it out loud. Right? And where would geographically you say it out loud? There's a Gemara at the end of Bracha. In the Beis HaMikdash, they used to say Baruch Shem Kavod out loud. And they heard the ineffable name of the Kodesh Baruch Hu, right? And they heard the real Shem of the forest. Everyone would press prostrate. They would go all the way down flat and on the ground, indicating their nothingness with respect to the infinity of God. And they would say Baruch Shem Kavod Mechusam Avoid. That's what we do in Yom Kippur, right? Also in remembering that, even though the Chazan is not saying the Shema for us. So that's why I think the Torah quotes that the minhag developed for us to say Baruch Hu Baruch Shemo as a Zechel Mikdash. We're not really saying the full name of Hashem, so we don't say Baruch Shem Kavod, not allowed to. But we say Baruch Hu Baruch Shemo, which is somewhat similar as a reminder of what they used to do in the Beis HaMikdash when they heard Hashem's name. Yeah?
Given the first reason, something like we don't want to anger the angels. So why is it that on Yom Kippur we can say it out loud?
Very good. That's a good question. That's exactly what I want to talk about. I thought it was Yom Brachos. I can't find it. So, if you put it all together then, we have a person, a location, and a time that we say Baruch Shem Kavod out loud. Or, if you will, you have celestial figures, a person, a geographical location, and a time. The Malachim say Baruch Shem Kavod out loud. Yaakov Avinu said it out loud. On Yom Kippur, we say it out loud. And in the Beis HaMikdash, we say it out loud. What's the common denominator? In a vague way, what's the common denominator? you're looking for something really deep. I'm just looking for a vague common denominator. No? What's the common denominator? It'd be based on Mikdash, Yom Kippur.
All really holy times or places.
Right, all really holy beings, human beings, celestial beings, places, times. Right? Somehow that, they're indicating that somehow this is like a more intense Kabbalat Omochot Shemayim. That idea, the fact that it's a Kabbalat Omochot Shemayim and not just a random praise, that I'm getting from the Maral in the Sivas Tovim. It seems to be parallel because it's right after the Shema, so you know it has to blend in. It's not Stama Kael Adon or Kol Masim Brochu Rishon Shema or Asherei. It's some kind of relationship to the Shema. So the Maral develops the following idea, and this will help explain. In this forum, they say that on Yom Kippur you act like a malach. So the malachim are not going to be makatreg because then there's no contradiction. But just to develop that a little bit, makatreg means to accuse us or to say who are you to say. So the morale says that on a basic level, a person declares loyalty to Hashem with the pasuk Shema. On a lofty level, so you say a bruch shem kavod. Now, this seems to be directly contradicted by a passage in Zohar. I'm not in the business of learning Zohars. I got this from a second-hand source. But the Zohar calls the Shema the Yehuda Yilo, the upper declaration of God's unity, and the Baruch Shem Kavod refers to it as the Yehuda Tato, the lower way of declaring God's unity. So I hadn't seen that Zohar when I saw the Maral. Morale was very well versed in the Kabbalistic writings, so it's hard to say that was a contradiction. So at the end, we'll probably try to say something to put the two together. But for now, we're going to go with the Morale's approach that the Shema is lower and the Ruch Shem Kavod is higher. And that would blend together with all these special beings, places, and times that we say out loud, because it represents a higher idea. What the Morale does not say is why it's higher and in what way it's higher. So he suggested, and a student of mine said she had heard that from a Rebbe of hers. I don't really have any sources on this, so I'm saying it's somewhat of conjecture. But it fits nicely with Morale's idea. Shema is a declaration. I get up on the Bima and I say, listen here, Jews, Shema Yisrael, which the Mepharshim explained either is referring to me, right? Listen here, Rebbe, right? Or the audience, right? Shema Yisrael, or according to one very fascinating Medrash, it's referring back through history. Listen here, our grandfather, Yaakov Avinu, remember your doubts about your children. Your great, 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 great grandson is still saying it, and we still believe. I always love that medrash, very dramatic medrash. A call across across history, calling back to Yaakov Avinu and saying, we're still saying Hashem Achad. But the different meanings of Yisrael. But the bottom line is, it's a declaration. So, the way Rav Hirsch and Rabbi Lamb from Yeshiva University wrote a whole book on the Shema, a lot of ideas I'm saying to some extent based on that book too. So, but let's picture the typical human being. Typical human being who's got the Yetzer Tov and the Yetzer Hara. And let's be real. A person is always on a state of total emunah. As the Midrashim point out, if so, no one would ever sin. Every time one sins, that's kfirah. It doesn't mean that you're consciously denying God, but you're certainly denying, at least for that second, the fact that God is right there watching you, otherwise you wouldn't sin. If you really had an intense awareness of the fact that a Kadosh Baruch is Melech Loretz Kavodo, if the policeman is watching you right then as you're about to put something in your pocket and pickpockets you, of course you wouldn't. So the fact that you sinned, even if it's something as minor as getting up late for Minyan, that means that there's a little bit of kfir in you. Right? I'm not putting everyone off the deep end here, right? But this is what they point out on a simple plane, that we're all mini kofrim, otherwise we'd be 100% tzaddikim. So, and there are always ups and downs in this. There are ups and downs in life in terms of our strength of emunah, our strength of confidence and reliance on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So every day you gotta scream at yourself. Listen here. Grab yourself by the collar and you say, listen here. Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. What kind of nutty things are you doing? Hashem is one, not... It's not just that Hashem is one, not two. That is everything. The whole thing, the whole world is just a manifestation of God's presence. So how could you violate His Torah? And of course, there's no surprise that right away, the second paragraph, we say, keep the mitzvot and do the mitzvot. That we spoke about a little bit in the first day of this month, when we tried to give a little deeper insight into the order of the parasha, it's also the morale. So we're making like a declaration to convince ourselves. That's like a quote of my Rebbe, that maybe one insight as to why women don't have to declare Shema. They just have to believe in Hashem Echad. They don't have to say Hashem Echad, because intuitively they have more belief. Parallel to, let's say, men's more activism is the fact that they have a greater Yetzirah, and therefore they have to battle more. They have to, and they have to, like the Chavetz Chaim, they got to speak to themselves more. Chavetz Chaim was famous for speaking to himself all the time. He had a famous episode where they write in the Torah that his Talmid, toward the end of his life, he was also hard of hearing, so he used to speak very loud. So I guess students used to pass by his little house, you know, and sometimes they would hear him speaking to himself. He wasn't nuts, but Baruch Hashem, he got the stories. So once he said, Yisrael Ne'er is tight. He just died. And he went to Shemayim. And the Malachim are buzz, and they're bringing his mitzvahs and his averos. And, you know, he did a lot of good things in life. But compared to what he could do, could have been much more. And what about all the averos that he did? And then he says, but right now, he's alive or dead. Right now you're alive. So now you can fix things. And then he woke up from his trance, you know, onto another volume of Mishneh Berurah, whatever, another more Sfarim published, more Tefillahs, more Torah, etc. He speaks to himself all the time. Anyway, so every day we speak to ourselves. Shema Yisrael, Shema Kina Shem Echad. Again, I'm putting it one way. There's another way of saying Shema, that it's our, they were calling out to God. Right, Shemon Esrei, there's one approach of Shema that's like God calling to us. It's like Kriyas HaTorah. That's like we're reading a passage in the Torah where Hashem is telling us, Shema Yisrael, Shema Hashem Echad. That's one view of Shema. That it's like Hashem calling to us. But I'm taking a different vantage point. That is, we are convincing ourselves. What's Baruch Shem Kavod? There's no Shema Yisrael in that. Baruch Shem Kavod is a statement of fact. Blessed is the glory of Hashem, whose glorious kingdom, or the glory of His kingdom, is eternal. Meaning, it takes that reality for granted. It's not a statement of convincing, it's that it's there. This is what I thought, and the student verified that one of her Rebbeim, I don't know what the name is, I don't know the name of the student, I don't know the name of the Rebbe, but I hope I could find this somewhere written down, because it would help understand why that's the Malachim say. The Malachim don't have, listen here, Gabriel, God is one. Oh, come on. You see the glory of Hashem around you. Listen here, you know, Mark Nelkin exists. So they all point out, how is it Shayach to speak about Amunah when you have Ria, when you have Yediyah? That's what they speak about, you know, when the sea split. How does it say, Vayiminu Bashem of Moshe Avdo? They believe. What do you mean they believe? They just saw a manifestation of God's presence. What do you mean they believe? They knew. Right, so the Malachim don't have to say Shema, listen here, an exercise in convincing, you know, an Eish HaTorah discovery seminar or a Moshe Shmuz, they know it. They just make a statement, recognizing what they are encountering. Baruch Shem Kavod Mochtam Avod. Blessed is the glory of His kingdom that is manifest before us. So if that's the case, then so we understand it. So who are you to say that, faker? You feel that? You know that? So Malachim are not lying when they say that. Yaakov Avinu, super tzaddik, even of his illustrious ancestors, Yitzchak and Yaakov, Yitzchak and Avram. Yaakov Avinu is called Bechir Sheva Avos. The madrigot that he reached, of course, riding on their coattails. He was able to get where he got to because of his illustrious father and grandfather. But he was the highest level. So he saw that manifestation of the divine presence. He was like a malach. He was a malach and a human guise, you know, like they speak about the tzaddikim, that their clothing is just, their body is their clothing, right? Just at will, they divest themselves from the physical entity. Again, not for now, but this is what the Malbim points out, that's the true meaning of Shalna Lecha Me'alvad Lecha. When Moshe Rabbeinu was told to take off his shoes, what does that really mean? It means take off your body. Now I got to communicate with your soul. That's why he points out that Yoshua wasn't on the level of Moshe, so he's only told to take off one shoe. you look very carefully in Pesukim, you see Yeshua also, when he spoke to a Malach in the early stages of his leadership, so he's also told to take Shal Na'alcha. But Moshe Rabbeinu at the burning bush is told Shal Na'alcha. Interesting, because Na'al is the clothing. So, and on a certain plane, the real Na'al is the guf. So Shal Na'alcha means take off your body. Right. Difficult concept to understand. But when you view the body as the physical barrier, so to speak, between the soul and connecting to Hashem, so then it's really understood. Anyway, getting back. Yom Kippur, at least in an ideal plane, right? Let's be real. We're not in the madrega of Yaakov Avinu on Yom Kippur. We're not in the madrega of Malachim on Yom Kippur in an intense plane, but we approximate and we get to a place where we know we could be. Basically, Yom Kippur is the time you take a break from the world. That's why the Rambam so beautifully points out that the laws of Yom Kippur, he doesn't call it the laws of the inui of Yom Kippur, if you will, like the pain of Yom Kippur. He calls it Shvisas Asor. What does that mean? The laws of the resting of the tent. What do you mean resting of the tent? You're not allowed to work on Yom Kippur, right? But what does that do with not eating and not drinking? So the Rambam said that just like you rest from work, you rest from eating. Now, hashkafically, the structure of Yom Kippur, we're coming to Tisha B'Av in a moment. On Tisha B'Av, they point out we do the exact same things as we do on Yom Kippur in terms of the core halachos, but from two totally different perspectives. The way they put it, I'll leave you with a word for Tisha B'Av, that on Tisha B'Av, who could eat? In such a sorrowful, mournful state, who could eat? On Yom Kippur, who needs to eat? That's different perspectives. On Yom Kippur, you take a break from the world. You just as you rest from work, you rest from eating and drinking. In other words, it's the Yom HaNeshama. We're human beings, we have to eat. But one day, we try to get in tune with who we really are, who the inner personality is. So then, by the end of Yom Kippur, we're ready to act in this angelic way, to perhaps get an echo of an echo of an echo of the manifest divine presence in the world and be able to say Baruch Shem Kvod Abba. It's a very nice mamzer. I mean, I'm from YU, so this is my hero. So, they put out a mamzer from Rabbi Soloveitchik, also collected from his writings. So they quote stories about him that after Yom Kippur, it took him like 3 hours before he could eat. He had to simmer down. It was on his level. And Yom Kippur, he was in the upper world, even though it wasn't a chiddush rebbe. And his, you know, Yom Kippur is the day of God. It's the Yom Hashem. So even the average Jew is able to get an echo of what Malachim sensed and be able to say Baruch Shem Kvod Abba. So now the Maral rolls up his sleeves. This is a classic Maral. I remember reading this. Wow, this is unbelievable. So what are we doing the whole year, Faker? What are you saying Baruch Shem Kvod even quietly? It's false. That you don't sense that. So on a certain plane without the Maral, you'll say that's what I want to get. So I remind myself that's what I want to get. Maral says, no, that's not enough for Maral. He says, but part of you does sense it. Part of every individual, however lowly the Jew is and whatever low level they're at, they are well aware of the manifest divine presence in an intense way that rivals what the Malachim sense. And that's the Neshama. Everyone has a Neshama. However much they hide from it and they ignore it and ignore its driving, etc., and its drive trust, it's there. The way the Meshech Chochma so beautifully puts it, and he says this concerning Bilam, right? He says, Vayigal Hashem is any Bilam. He opened his eyes and he saw the Malach. Almost sounding like that, he just had to open his eyes. It was there. So the Meir Simcha Dvinsky explains, because the Neshama is able to encounter the total picture of spirituality in the world, including the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and all those angels floating all over the place that are doing all these things behind the scenes, except it's hidden from the goof, right? For the 99.999% of the population, and even for the 0.001, only a certain opportunity, they're not able to tap into this. But the Neshama senses it. I had a sense that Hashem gave us a mushel of this. It's called, you know, the ultraviolet light waves and high-pitched sounds. In other words, the concept that there are things going on in the world that but you don't have the radio frequency to tune into. But they're there. Right? Animals could hear more of those frequencies, right? And if you had instrumentation, you can pick up the ultraviolet. So too, on the level of neshama, they're picking up all of these, so to speak, waves that are in the world, even though you can't see them with your eyes. That's a fundamental theme that I like to repeat. There's a lot of analogies in the natural order for spiritual concepts. The concept of time freezing, you know, at the speed of light, you know, the fact that time is a creation. Right now, we're finishing up. So, says the Maral, well, the neshama is hidden. It's quiet. It's in an inner recess of our existence. So says the Maral, that's why we say it quietly. In other words, the Shema is a manifestation of our reality that we perceive. We say it out loud. That's here. That's what we're able to sense. The Baruch Shem Kavod is a statement of our reality that is just as real, but is not able to be accessed fully. And the way the Maral puts it, it's b'mokom chashai. It's in a private area of our existence. So too, we say the Baruch Shem Kavod privately, quietly, to demonstrate that the quiet part of us is on that level. No, isn't that unbelievable insight? So every day we are acting in an angelic way because we are angelic. That's getting back to the term we coined this year. Animalis angelicus, right? That's a human being. So the animalist part, or the animalist angelicus part, you know, but the angelicus in lowercase. So he says, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokim, Hashem Echad. I got a long way to go before I really solidify this within me, and I got to keep convincing myself in order to keep myself directed. But the angelicus part of the human being, which is there, more real than the body, is always declaring Baruch Shem Kavod. And we highlight that majesty of man every day by saying it quietly. Not just because we're not on the level. We say it quietly because the quiet part of us is saying it. And on those special occasions of the year, whether it's based on Migdash or Yom Kippur, or by the high-level tzaddikim, so then they're already tapped into the resource of the neshama, and therefore they could be able to say it out loud, because they actually are encountering the divine presence.